the waterline. Three coats still shows. Right here, we lost it one drop at a time.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning. 9/11 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We just heard, I believe, Nobody's Girl. And they will be at the Linda this Saturday at 8 p.m., thelinda.org, to find out more. It's the Roundtable panel, and they're still filing in here. But I think we now have a quorum. investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is here. Judy Patrick, who is Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Albany County DA David Soares is here, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, all.
Yo! Morning.
That was very enthusiastic.
Woo-hoo!
Judy Patrick, you are so tall today, it is insane. What happened?
You know, it's took some growth hormone. It's really, gotten big.
It's really working out for you.
Feel like a giant.
That's great. David Soares, what's up with you?
Oh, I just feel so great being an American today, watching our democracy at work.
Oh, did you watch any of that? Oh, we're going to get to that in a minute.
Oh, so, you know, it's interesting when one party decides to tap out on democracy and say, we're not going to participate anymore.
Well, it was an interesting set of hearings. Rosemary Armeo, welcome. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Alan, I have a feeling that you, like the rest of us in the newsroom, pretty much tuned in for most of yesterday's hearing.
I certainly did that, and I certainly watched it. I listened to it on NPR. I wasn't happy with the NPR coverage.
Why?
Can I tell you?
Why?
I thought it was a little bit slanted to the right, to tell you the truth.
But, I mean, right? They just played the hearings, right?
No, they also opined. They also interrupted an awful lot when they didn't have to. Somebody was talking, and Taylor was talking, and then you're listening to Bill Taylor. Come on. You know, put your ego on the shelf.
Well, I think that they have to do that. Now, I remember hearing some, we were listening to some hearings last week or whatever, and they do the same thing periodically. They say, you're listening to Republican blah, 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 or Republican or Democrat blah, blah, blah. And you miss the first part of what they're saying. And yes, it's a little annoying, but it's radio. There's not a crawl at the bottom of the screen to say, you're listening to this person.
I say, when all else fails, shut up.
Well, you've certainly said that to me fairly
you
often.
You say that?
I would never say that to Ray Graff, who is the pearl of wisdom at WAMC.
Really?
The pearl.
Today, I see. Well, yes. Yeah, so the Democrats say yesterday's public session revealed a striking account of Trump abusing his office by pressing the newly elected president of Ukraine for political investigations of rival Democrats. Republicans saw it a little differently. They counter that the hearing showed none of that. They say the two seasoned diplomats at the witness table at best offered secondhand accounts of the president's July 25th call, and that's the central point of this impeachment inquiry. Oh, gosh, who wants to go first today?
I'm going to let the journalist go first because I have a lot of journalist issues that I have to address.
No, that's
today.
Good. Go ahead with those, David.
No, let's hear from the journalist.
All right, fair enough.
So I appreciated the coverage when it went live to the actual hearing, when I actually heard the testimony. I watched it on television, on PBS. I didn't have any of those eruptions, no commercials, and I thought it was very compelling when you actually got to listen to the witnesses tell their stories, which I thought were very compelling. They were clearly men of integrity, I guess, from what I can perceive from what they said. They seemed like genuine public servants, and I thought, as a citizen, it was necessary for me to watch this. I felt it was my civic duty to watch it, and I realize that I'm in a good spot because I'm able to. A lot of people had work and they couldn't do it. I'm disappointed that people who work 9 to 5 or who don't have the luxury of spending 5 hours watching television didn't get a good summary of the day's event at the end of the day. But I think if they read a newspaper, they could.
Newspapers are good, or you can listen to the whole thing. I'm sure it's archived everywhere.
Right, but it's still a lot of time for some person. But again, it's just a talking point or a snippet of Bill Taylor or George Kent's testimony really doesn't do justice to what they were saying. I think you really need some prolonged time. You need to spend some time with this testimony to understand the credibility that these guys brought to the table.
All right, before we slam the journalist from David Soares, let's go to another journalist, Rosemary Armeo. What do you think?
Well, Judy and I talked about this, and I agreed. It's really hard as one of us. And they talked about it on MSNBC, where Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow, for example, are so infused. They're complete nerds. They know more about the case than the prosecutors. So you listen to a day yesterday, it's like, oh, God, there's nothing new here except for the one phone call, the overheard phone call that we'll hear more about later. And so you're looking forward to what's coming in the future, and you don't know what's new here. And I found that I was watching it like a play, like Devin Nunes' opening address was ridiculous in a way, and yet it was really fun. I'm sorry, that was a well-written, colorful, pyrotechnic speech. I thought it was great.
You know, some fireworks in the background were probably nice.
Yeah, it was great. And Jim Jordan's little show is always fun to watch. But that is so divorced from what we should really be looking at, that as a journalist turned viewer, which is what I am now, I'm not covering it. I found it really difficult, and I don't want to say more because I'm waiting to get this is like bartering.
The shoe to drop.
This
right.
is like bartering in Turkey. You got to hear what the seller says first. Right, I don't want to talk first.
Before we let David Soares drop some shoes, I forgot to mention the email address. It's panel@wamc.org. If you would like to drop a shoe of your own, panel@wamc.org. Keep the letters brief. We'll have a lot of them today, no doubt. No links, no attachments, no naughty pictures, no abbreviations. Proofread, by all means. And now, David Soares, Albany County District Attorney, about to unload on journalists.
No, Ray, before I begin, I just want to say that I do love you in Seafoam Green. It just really brings out
my wife
your
got
eyes.
Me this shirt, yeah.
And it just giving me a sense of comfort this morning.
Really? Well, yeah.
You know, first of all, let me just say that if you love history, if you are an American and you love your country, yesterday was specifically a very special day, right? It's your opportunity to see your government at work in addressing something that has occurred that threatens not only our presence in our country, but also threatens our safety because of our long-standing historical enemy, those being the Russians, continuing to meddle with us. And what we saw yesterday was one party that was interested in really delving into the facts and bringing out those facts, and then we saw a party that just was left with absolutely no defense and continued to rattle off theories and debunked stories, one right after the other. And my frustration with our media is covering that as if it were legitimate. I mean, oh, it's okay to say, okay, Devin Nunes, you're covering what Devin Nunes is saying because he said it. But I think it's irresponsible not to also mention that 95% of what he was saying has already been debunked. And they just
they
didn't
did
do
that. Oh, no, they did. Well, come on.
So you're talking constantly. About the post game and not the during the actual hearings.
I'm talking about not only the post game, but during the. If you have time to put on crying, to just put these crawls all over the place telling me what the weather is, what the stock market, you know, have one that just says BS. You know what I mean?
They, no, wait a minute.
They don't say BS and they can't, but that's just not true. They spoke at length on not just CNN, but MSNBC, and I don't know about Fox, I didn't see it there, but about how what he was saying was outdated, that other people listening who are not conspiracy theorists wouldn't even know what he's talking about. It was so debunked. And, in fact, the witnesses also
no,
said
I,
it was debunked.
I agree. I agree with Rosemary, and I hate
oh,
to do it.
I love when you agree with me.
But I have heard on CNN countless times in which they've said that wasn't true.
Yeah.
The president said that, and that wasn't true. So, you know, that's been debunked. So
we have gotten better at it, don't you think, since Trump came in? Because at first there was a great reluctance to ever interrupt or to say what the president's saying. That's a total lie. But we do it now.
Nicole Wallace will say it in real time.
She's not a real journalist.
We're also talking about the New York Times, who at the beginning of this administration said that they're not going to use the word lie.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? We're not using the word lie, so when your kid comes home and tells you that he got an A in math, but it turns out he got an F. Yeah. That's just not a lie anymore.
Well, you learn it, and I learned it in journalism school. I'm sure, Judy, you did too, that there are certain words you don't say. They are red letter words that just say, libel attorneys, pay attention here, and liar is one of them. You point out the untruth, but you don't use that word.
I don't want to take too much credit except to say, I said that Trump was a lying liar in the very beginning. And I said it over and over again, and everybody looked at me. And you're right, Rosemary, people didn't want to use that word. But lying is what he was doing.
On the other hand, the Washington Post, from the minute he came in, began keeping track. And data is the way you confront lying. And they have counted how many times, and they've documented what the lie was or the kind of misconstrued way he presents information. And now we don't have to say he's a liar. We can say the Washington Post has counted this many times. It's up around 13,000 now that
What's interesting here is that these hearings, I mean, and of course, this week we've been taken back to where they've been playing a lot of the last several impeachment hearings that were interesting because I think the difference being is that those hearings took place at a time when families gathered around the television and watched, right?
Right. And talked about what they were seeing.
And so you could sit there and deliberate on what was happening, you know, with the witnesses as well as the people doing the questioning. Today, our mediums are 120 characters. They're 15-second sound bites. And so the entirety of the Republican defense strategy was designed, right, to convey their message to their audience, because of course we decide which world we want to live in, depending on whether you choose Fox or MSNBC. You know,
is the media in danger in my little town of Great Barrington? Not to go too far with this, we have a heroine named Lee Davis who has been on, and they are trying to shut her up.
Ellen, one of the reasons why I'm so passionate whenever you do the fund drive, and you know, I think you have a lot of people that are rooting for you, is because this is one of those medias that you can still engage in a town square sort of setting and have a healthy exchange of opinion. That is just not the way that the vast majority of our media today is geared.
Well, David, I just wanted to finish up on that one thing. The town board of selectmen is trying to pass a silence rule, which if anything is coming up before the board, you can't go on social media. Well, one guy has a radio show on there on the board of selectmen, and they're not going after that. This thing is endemic. It's beginning to happen all over the place.
So, David, on the hearings, would you want real-time fact-checking? We talked a little bit about this on the Media Project this week.
Absolute real-time fact-checking. And I think that the only way that we, as a country right now, can come... Look, the fact that the Russians were able to use social media and that amazing platform to divide us, and the fact that we have, you know, organizations that are built on the motive of profit as opposed to ethics, and I'm talking about the Fox Network now, you know, it's a recipe for disaster in our democracy, right? I mean, and to me, the first signs of this coming really happened when the Dixie Chicks took a position against George W. Bush in the Gulf War. They made a statement, and all of a sudden, their records were being banned. Now, I don't even like country, right? Like George W. Bush even less. But the fact that that happened was appalling, especially if you're an American and you believe...
That goes back further than that. John Lennon said, and he was quoted out of context, said, we're bigger than Jesus.
And
people burned records.
And you're right about that. I think the difference being, however, when the Dixie Chicks said what they said, it was sort of at the very infancy stages of media companies gobbling up media companies, and they were able to demonstrate just how powerful a movement that was, because they were banned on a whole series of networks that would have otherwise played their music. That's what's happening right now, and unless our government begins to take back some control over some of these platforms, we're going to continue to be exploited.
Slippery slope.
Oh, man, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, once you have the government deciding what's news and what's appropriate.
Then you're in China.
It's not the government taking control over the media outlets, but it's why is it that a newspaper or a radio station has to play that little teaser at the very end of a commercial, a political ad, where the person approves of that ad? There are all sorts of rules that are put in place for our legitimate media, right? Where they have to subscribe.
For the broadcast media,
that it's not reflected in our social media. And the fact that social media now is a tool that is used on phones and everywhere, we have to begin looking at that.
I see the appeal there, and I agree. I think what Zuckerberg is doing on Facebook is appalling, but I don't see government helping, especially this government right now and this court that we have.
But I would like it
to play out. Well, they could, for example, ban political ads on Facebook the same way that Twitter has done voluntarily. That would be one. Because it's so draconian, I would still like to see the free marketplace shake out. I look at Kathy Griffith. Do you remember her? She posed mm-hmm. with a fake bloody head of the president. Yeah. And they went crazy. And she also, like the Dixie Chicks earlier, were banned. She was banned everywhere. She now has come back on the same media that banned her. And she's got a whole comedy show built around what happened to her. That is far more powerful than banning her and shutting down the media that carried the information.
But that was free market. Her network said, you're done.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Ray, is that I don't want to see it governed by the government. I want free market to take care of it.
Pivoting back to the hearings that took place yesterday, mm-hmm. I will tell you as just a prosecutor sitting back watching, okay, you could not have asked for two better witnesses to start off hearing, right? These are fact witnesses that came in, that laid out their credentials, unassailable. The fact that the foundation was laid, that they worked for both Republican and Democrat, and they have this incredible history of having, you know, being nonpartisan, right? That was the most excellent way to start off.
Well, David, I agree, but take it this way. If you listen to Fox and if you listen to Nunes in the beginning, even they were not immune from the kind of crass nonsense that the Republicans put out. And every word of that was played. You may think that's correct, and I do. I think they were great. And nevertheless, if you're listening to the other guys, they were dry. They were uninspired, unlike Nunes, who is so passionate about his case, and that's why you have multiple.
That's why Judy is right, that the way to get the impact of that hearing was you had to listen to Taylor, excuse me, over hours, where he didn't rise to any taunts from the Republicans, just was straight. Well,
I think as a seasoned prosecutor, he was absolutely, you know, he really wore that hat as opposed to the politician hat, mm-hmm. Because the facts were on their side. The law's on their side. The facts are on their side. They didn't have to resort to any theatrics, right? But if you're Devin Nunes and if you're the Republicans, the only thing you had were theatrics. That's the only thing you had, right? You didn't. It was indefensible. You put them in a terrible position to have to defend a case that was indefensible.
Yeah, but they didn't have to do it. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, you're right. This is how would you like to be in that position? Nevertheless, they don't have to be in that position. In Watergate, you had Baker and others who were not. They said, this is wrong, and we're going to say it's wrong. They're trying to say wrong is right.
David, what did you think about the cross-examination?
We only have 15 seconds, but go ahead.
I thought that he was working with the only thing that he had to work with, is to try to create that alternative foreign policy group, is to try to create a situation where they had a little bit of legitimacy.
I have a question or two for the prosecutor, but that will have to wait until after we break for news.
Write you a postcard from the Washington Zoo, leaving.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning. 9:33 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The Roundtable panel in full gear now. Rosemary Armeo, David Soares, Judy Patrick, and Alan Shartok. We're talking about the impeachment hearings, as you may have guessed. Our prosecutor on the panel today, Albany County District Attorney David Soares. Yesterday, much was made by Republicans, and perhaps there is some kernel of accuracy in this, that the hearing, that the testimony yesterday was hearsay. And there, and again, I listened. I didn't really watch. We listened to the NPR coverage. One of the Democratic congressmen said, well, in many ways, hearsay is better than direct evidence. First, I'd like you to address that.
Well, hearsay is evidence, right? There is perfect. There are exceptions to the hearsay rules that permit hearsay in a legal proceeding, right?
Right.
So the fact that you had hearsay there is completely appropriate.
Is the level of hearsay, in other words, second, third, fourth hand, in other words, the seven levels of Kevin Bacon or whatever we're talking about here, some of this was third, fourth hand. Does that make a difference?
Correct, but you also had individuals there that could testify and corroborate some of the hearsay that they had testified to, right? They had independent knowledge that they themselves could corroborate. Now, if the Republicans felt that there was a problem there with the various levels of hearsay that they had to listen to yesterday, then they would simply pick up the phone, call the White House, and say, allow for those people who have direct knowledge,
Bolton,
right,
and others,
exactly, to testify.
So now, that some of those will be there next week. Sondland will be there next week.
Exactly. And so, they continue to go back to this whistleblower and hearsay evidence with respect to the whistleblower, okay? So imagine this for a second. Just play along with me, okay? I hear that you said that Rosemary Armeo called me, a jerk, called me a fool.
Well, that's
right?
True.
But she does.
And right? I'm willing to attest to that.
So I can attest to
that. So play along with that, but you're not going to tell me who told you that Rosemary Armeo said that about me, right? Rosemary Armeo hears that this is being said now that I've gotten wind of it, and Rosemary releases a statement confirming that she did, in fact, call me a fool.
Right.
Jerk.
Right?
Jerk.
I don't need the whistleblower anymore because I've got confirmation directly from the source that this was said about
me. And that's what Trump did, right?
That's exactly what Trump did. The day that he released, quote-unquote transcript that says it's not a transcript of the phone call, he basically confirmed everything that the whistleblower would have, right? Therefore, if you're looking at a list of possible witnesses to call, you've just made the whistleblower irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Alan.
That's a good example.
Oh, Alan's mixing some martinis. So give him a second here.
Whoa, no. I'm here.
All right.
I'm here.
Shaken, not stirred, sir.
Yeah, I'm here. That's right. The martini is something I'm not familiar with, Ray, but
delicious.
You far more than I.
Not at this hour.
So,
10 a.m.? Yeah, I'm all over it.
Yeah. Well, to me, this concept of false equivalency, which we've been talking about, is so apparent here. The idea that the Republicans scream Nunes and the others, and they jump up and down, and they yell, and they do histrionics, and their people say our guy is great, and the other guys are not great because they're so boring, and they're this or that. Well, this is not false equivalency. This is not you have to put 10 minutes of one on and 10 minutes of the other on. There is something called truth here. And I think David Soares makes a very good point about all of that. The real question for so many people is, will the American people be able, Ray and group, to discern this? I think we have two camps. We have the Republican camp, staying with them, privileges at stake and continued privileges at stake, and you have the rest of the people. So it's really about 60-40. And will that show in elections as a result of what they're hearing right now? That's the question.
I can attest that Rosemary is scowling.
Yeah,
Rosemary.
No, I'm lost in the numbers that Alan is citing. But are you trying to get at, Alan, what you think people, the audience, thought about this performance?
That's exactly
yesterday?
You are so good at helping me out there, Rosemary. That's exactly what I was trying to do.
Yeah, I don't think we know the answer to that yet. Certainly the Republicans all came out and began talking about how what a snooze fest it was, how boring it was. And Judy and I, who actually did sit pretty rapt through the whole afternoon
watching. Did you sit together?
No. Different place. Okay. I was under the covers with my mother eating popcorn and watching TV all afternoon.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. And I didn't find it boring, but it did take a lot of hours. And so the Republicans, who do have a key on how to reach people through social media and other messaging, they have been hitting on this is really long and boring. And
by the way, Rosemary, for whatever it's worth, is why I mentioned what was going on in Great Barrington. The idea that, you know, the Board of Selectmen is trying to tell their people that they may not use social media. Can you talk about our First Amendment? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's indefensible, and it will go nowhere if somebody fights it. But the Republicans are doing something instead, which is appealing to our need to be entertained. Oh, this is really boring. Oh, it feels like homework to have to watch it. Well, learning your government in action, blah, 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 social studies class.
Yes, they do. And if you're gonna give them a tip of the cap, you know, in terms of anything that they're doing with a strategy, it's that they're conflating, you know, this portion of the impeachment process with a trial, right?
Yep.
And
absolutely.
So they're appealing to the higher virtuous notions of what fairness in a trial is, and making people say, okay, why can't the president have his lawyer? Because this isn't a trial.
And why can't the trial and the whole hearing be as exciting as it is in the movies or television? Well, that's really hard, too.
I say this to juries. I say this to grand jurors, you know, especially when they've had an opportunity to sit and listen to a number of cases. You know, the reality is a prosecutor getting up and laying the foundation for the admission of a particular document is pretty boring.
Yes,
right?
But it has to be done.
But it has to be done because you have to lay those foundations and you have to create that record because there will be others that will have to decide issues, right? So, yes, it's not always exciting, but if you're interested in facts and truth, then you should be on the edge of your seat watching what's happening.
Well, there's the difference. A whole lot of people are not. And that's why Devin Nunes is so hard to combat. He's a fool. But, wow, he is sure entertaining. And I don't have to sit and go through process. I just listen to a guy speaking in, like, really wildly crazy stuff. It's fun to watch.
I used to say that about Charlie Callis. He's a fool, but he's wildly entertaining.
Yeah.
Judy Patrick, why don't you get the last comment, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the letters here.
You know what? One of the things I really came away from yesterday, I thought it was compelling and interesting and fascinating, but one of the things, I don't think the president really wants an investigation of the Bidens. I think he just wants the public announcement that there's an investigation.
Yes.
I think that was said yesterday during the hearing.
That's because perhaps if they really do investigate once again, they'll find that there's nothing there, and that will be counterproductive.
It's not the truth, it's the scandal.
Yeah.
It's the optics.
Yep.
And let's take a quick break on that point. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org if you'd like to write us. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, David Soares, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll be back with letters. Hearing music of Nobody's Girl and Goodnight Moonshine, two different groups that will be playing at the Linda Saturday, November 16th. That is this Saturday at 8 p.m., thelinda.org, if you want to find out more about that. This is the Roundtable. It's 9:43. It's a Thursday morning, probably our last Roundtable for the week. Tomorrow, the hearings start again at 9 a.m. We have a panel parsing yesterday's action. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, and David Soares. And wow, we got a stack of letters, so let's get to them right now. This one's from Ellen. NPR is handling the impeachment inquiry like it's a soap opera. I'm sick of the drama. And that's from Ellen. Audrey writes, I question the Democratic strategy of first calling these two witnesses who had no direct contact with the president during the time frame in question. I understand the idea of wanting to build a narrative to a culminating point, but unfortunately, they're expecting too much attention span and patience from the American public. It opened up the opportunity for Republicans to cater to their supporters that the case is so weak if this is how we start. these people may not even watch further because of that assertion, but the Republicans. Honestly, this should be a relatively easy case to prove, but I feel like it's being botched. And that's from Audrey. And Audrey, before we comment on your letter, you proofread this thing. You wrote it. It was a little longer than usual, but it was perfectly done. Well done, Audrey. Who wants to comment on the content?
I do. I think she makes an excellent point. It's good, and I worry about that. On the other hand, again, having watched it, I did put in the time needed. I was impressed that for the first time in this whole controversy, we were talking about Ukrainians. We were talking about the impact of the decisions that Trump made. People died because he held up the aid. And we have not talked about that before. He talked, Taylor, and both of them actually, but especially Taylor, talked about how he was at the battlefield. Someone died on the day he visited. And that was because U.S. aid was not there to back it up. This is not some academic, political discussion.
Audrey?
We are, again, we need to protect our allies and to protect our own interests in that part of the world.
I love Audrey's form, but I don't agree with the substance, because you have to lay a foundation for your case. And that narrative has to why is this important to American safety and security? Why? It's because the Russians are not our friends, and they're attacking people who we need, okay, who are part of NATO, who need to be in support of us.
Now, on Friday, they'll be building their case further. Former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, will be on the stand, or they will be hearing from her under oath. She told lawmakers in a closed-door deposition that there was a concerted campaign against her as Trump and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, pushed for probes of Democrat Joe Biden and other political opponents, and she was ousted. However, in fairness, the ambassadors, they serve at the discretion of the president, right? He can hire, fire anybody they want. FDR hired Joe Kennedy, for God's sake.
You can fire Jim Comey because he serves at the pleasure of the president. What you can't do is fire Jim Comey because he's investigating you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then next week, that's when perhaps we get to the point where David Soares is saying that the fireworks begin. They're laying foundation now. You got Sondland coming on. Vindman will be there. Fiona Hill will be there. That may be more compelling for a lot of
people.
Well,
you know, Ray, you said hire and fire. That's exactly right. This ambassador was hired by Trump and then dismissed by Trump because she was getting in the way. That's what's so disgusting, you know, about this.
But not impeachable, presumably, right?
Well, it depends. We know that you can impeach a president just for whatever reasons you want to.
High crimes and misdemeanors, right?
An abuse of power falls within that category.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So she was replaced by Taylor, who seems... Right, Taylor?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
A man of great rectitude, right?
Yes.
And a personal choice of Pompeo, the secretary who is slavish in his obedience to this president, right? That was what happened. And then when he wrote to Pompeo and said, I don't like what's going on, the man who chose him and talked him out of retirement, Taylor, there was a chaos. You know, he wouldn't even answer him.
The other thing too that I think we shouldn't lose sight of is the fact that the dollars that were procured for this purpose had been done so by Congress. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Right.
And therefore it was supposed to go to one place. There was no strings attached. It wasn't we're going to give you aid, you know, if Europe provides, you know, X percent additional resources. Mm-hmm. There were no conditions that Congress placed on these dollars, okay? So the only thing that had to be done, those dollars had to be dispersed, and the Ukrainians could have used that money, okay, in buying more missiles to address the war that's going on in their border right now.
This one came in from Ann in Connecticut. 3 points on truth. One, every single Republican in the hearings thought they were out to win a high school debate instead of seeking the truth of presidential abuse of power. Two, journalists on NPR and probably elsewhere have adopted the bad habit of stating, quote, according to this person or that person, instead of researching and presenting the facts and the truth. Three, anyone can assess the whole hearings access the whole hearings via computer, via various websites, to listen for themselves instead of hearing biased summaries. And that's from Ann in Connecticut.
Oh, Anne, come on.
Anne has a point.
You can research it, but people don't, and many don't have the time to, and it's irresponsible journalism. That's what Judy was complaining about.
Leave Anne alone. You need to leave because Anne is. I agree with Anne. You go.
This is mansplaining. So stop it and let me make my point, David.
Oh yeah.
Be good. Be good.
When all else fails, mansplaining comes in.
Oh God.
All right, Judy.
I can tell you that as someone who doesn't have cable access, that I can't live stream anything. And so there are a percentage of Americans who don't have access, who can't download it on the computer because we get throttled by our satellite companies. We can't download it.
I do love the idea that Anne has that a journalist can just listen to both sides and then research and come up with the facts. So, like, do away with juries or judges or hearings in Congress. We get to decide. That's exactly what you don't want.
This one is from Jeff in Colony. You have most likely covered before, but could clarify again. If the Senate votes no for removal on upcoming articles of impeachment, can other articles be considered in the future on different charges?
Well, the sentence can be exactly what we've seen in the past, where someone can be rebuked, they could be censured, right? And, you know, that becomes part of your history, right? So removal isn't the only sentence that the Senate can engage in. And I'll tell you what, there is going to be so much pressure on the Republican Senate after all these facts are laid out.
Absolutely.
Over the course of
I believe McConnell said the hearings will happen. I mean, the trial will happen.
I do not trust the guy who says, you know, we don't necessarily appoint new Supreme Court justices on an election year, and then turns around, you know, after the election goes his way and goes, oh, of course we would.
Well, there is a certain element out there that's saying, well, this is exactly what McConnell wants, Alan, that he'll tie up these presidential candidates for weeks on end in a trial. What do you think about that?
Well, it could be, but I think McConnell is caught here. His people are sitting there, more Republicans than Democrats sitting on contested seats. And if they go the wrong way, which is either way, in other words, it doesn't have to be one way or the other, they're caught. And McConnell knows it. And he knows that if they say, OK, we're not even going to have a trial, which is prescribed by the Constitution, they're going to be in worse shape than if they didn't have that trial.
Well, so Roberts would never let him get away, I think, with not having a trial. But what do you think of the idea being floated all over the Internet that with a simple vote, majority vote, the Senate could make the voting on the trial secret? So you would not have to be responsible for who voted
they will not,
way.
Rosemary, they won't do it.
Yeah, they won't do because
they can't do that.
Wouldn't that lead to a more likely conviction?
Well, yeah,
exactly.
No, they can do it, Rosemary. But from a political point of view, an electoral point of view, they can't do that.
And remember,
they would be furious.
Yeah, every single one of these Republican senators as well as representatives are all catering to an audience of one. And the idea that Donald Trump could ever live with senators voting in secret so he can't see their undevoted loyalty to him, that's just outrageous.
And not even that, David, it's a matter of nuance. You're fighting for me, all right, but you're not saying everything I want you to say, so therefore I'm going to tweet you out.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, what can he do about it? A tweet is a tweet. These senators still have their own voting base. Are we reading too much into a presidential tweet?
No, wrong. No one right now is watching the various polls that are coming out more closely than senators. No one.
I agree with that. And they're caught in a very bad spot. Their whole reason for supporting Trump is they know if Trump lifts a finger and says, this is a bad guy, I'm going to lose. Right? So right now, if that changes, so do they.
You know, I'm taking the contrary view on the timing of this trial
what?
In the Senate. I'm thinking that it's to the Democrats' advantage to extend this as far as they can into the spring, even early summer, because it's bad for the Trump's reelection.
I think that's been their plan since day one, to be honest with you. This one's from Stephen in Amherst. I feel the media, including NPR, have done us a great disservice not using the so-called red-letter word lie. To teach our children clearly, we point out what a lie is and what isn't. We use the word, call out their action and behavior. The media's skittishness against using a clear, well-understood term, lie, results in covering up misbehavior from Trump and his supporters in a hypocritical way that foments further lies. This is not what I do teaching my own kids, nor is it what I want the media doing to communicate with the world.
Well, then you haven't been listening to WAMC, which has been calling out a lie from the very beginning. And by the way, it's a good time to say there's a big difference between NPR and WAMC.
My man from Amherst.
we only have a couple of minutes here before the top of the hour. We have a stack of letters. It's quite clear we'll be on. And these letters are well done today, not as opposed to other days.
Funny.
I just wanted to get David's point on another issue here before we go to news in the 2 minutes or so. New York State Republicans now are entering legislation to back off on the bail reform issue, which is about to take effect. And as a prosecutor, I just wanted to get your opinion on these potential bail reforms. And basically, what it will do is allow nonviolent felonies and misdemeanor suspects to be free without cash bail. You've talked about this in the past. Where do you stand on these Republican lawmakers who are calling for action on bail reform?
Well, let's first and foremost, let's bifurcate the issue. There's the politics of bail reform, and then there's the reality of bail reform, okay? The politics to me is it's a non-issue because this state needed bail reform. We desperately needed bail reform, right? There's no reason why people who commit low-level offenses, nonviolent offenses, should be ever held in jail. That is the absolute truth, okay? Now, let's go to the other issue as to how this bill was passed. It was rushed through, right? There are so many unintended consequences that we really have to look at and make those corrections, okay? This isn't a Republican issue. It is not a Democratic issue. It is a public safety issue. And so, you know, you're not going to see me at press conferences talking about these issues because I don't want to engage in the nasty politics of it all. What I'm hoping for is that reasonable minds come together and have a mutual interest in fixing the problems that exist, okay? And that's it.
I mean, Jim Todisco yesterday proposed a 1-year postponement of the reforms. Are you behind that?
We can go ahead and have these reforms with our members of our assembly making those corrections. And I'll give you a couple of examples. A person who commits manslaughter by way of operating a motor vehicle and killing someone, that's a person that is automatically and presumptively released, okay? I don't think we signed up for that. A person who burglarizes your home, that person gets arrested, and the very next day that person is back out on the street. I don't think that we signed up for that, okay? An individual who is trafficking in fentanyl or drugs, who is carrying a kilo of fentanyl or heroin or cocaine, that person is arrested and subsequently released. And I don't think that whether you're a Republican or a Democrat who wanted bail reform signed up for what we ultimately received.
Well, what doesn't need to be reformed? What parts of the bill are good?
The parts of the bill that are great, that are fantastic, are the parts where people who commit low-level offenses, are going to be issued appearance tickets. They're not going to be arrested and spend the night in jail and brought to arraignment. I think those things are excellent. Okay. I do think that stripping judges of the discretion to consider the safety of victims and community, I think that's wrong. No other state has done this, and I know that Alan Chartok's great friend, the governor, will be on this show at some point in time in the near future. But what he's out there pitching is what I would call an LIE, you know, the word that we're all afraid of, okay? This is massive spinning going on where he compares New York to New Jersey. New Jersey did bail reform, but New Jersey invested significantly in pretrial services, okay? And New Jersey did not strip a judge's ability to exercise his or her discretion in making those decisions.
Write a reply. He's not my pal.
All right. In your estimation, what percentage increase in your budget would you need to make this happen?
For purposes of bail and discovery, we've sought 32 additional people for my office in order to be in compliance with full implementation.
Nice.
I've been informed that we would not be getting 32. We've continued to engage with our local leaders because there is zero funding coming back from the state. And what's offensive here is that this bill had been pushed through primarily by our downstate colleagues, all of whom live in a city that has the most robust pretrial services. So we're not disagreeing with the fundamental principle that if you have pretrial services, this can work. We're not disagreeing with that.
Why do you need the money?
Well, we need the money because if a defendant doesn't come back to court, that person has to be called. Someone has to pick up a phone and call. It's not going to be a judge from the bench. So the pretrial services, they hire people that will do that, right? If a person has a particular addiction, if a person has an issue that they need to be diverted directly into treatment, the pretrial services, they will handle that. In New York, New York City, they're doing it right. And what the rest of the 57 counties in New York State are saying is that we want to do it right, too.
All right, we have to take a break here. David Soares is here on the panel. Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. It is the roundtable panel, and we have a lot of letters, mostly about the impeachment hearings yesterday. We'll get back on that topic after news.
Well, I thought a lot about it. Annie, I know I let you down.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's Thursday morning, 10:06 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're having a great time here today with Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, David Soares, and Alan Shartok, and you at panel@wamc.org. And the letters, they keep coming. This one is from Keiko. Kudos to Rosemary for finding twisted artistic value in speeches by Nunes and Jordan. I also found them entertaining and thus achieving their goal of distraction. In today's world, where facts weigh less than a tweet, Dems must pay more attention to our emotional intelligence and tell the stories that resonate in people on a gut level.
Did you not also hear me talk about Taylor discussing how the Ukrainians are actually affected by these decisions? They're not abstract. You can both see the twisted entertainment value and get the storytelling narrative that the Democrats are presenting.
I do want to comment on that letter, though, because look, one of the fundamental problems of having to defend the truth versus people who just go about lying is that there is a greater burden on you as the person who's defending the truth of having to always communicate truthfully, right? It's like me as a prosecutor, when I'm asked a question about a case, I can't say anything about the case because I can't prejudice a possible jury. But the defense attorney goes on and wax poetically about all the problems in my case, and it becomes frustrating, right?
Right.
You're always going to have a disadvantage when you're talking about this administration and this current Republican Party because they can say anything, they fire away, and we always have to have the burden, right, of being professional and carefully articulating everything that we say. Remember, Representative Schiff, he mocked, you know, the transcript, non-transcript, mm-hmm. right? He just mocked it. And all of a sudden, right? They wanted to censor him, right? It's like, wait, he mocked something and he was truthful about it.
At the outset, though, that was a bit much, right?
It's a bit much, and yes. I think he would take it back if he had.
You wouldn't do that, right?
Absolutely not, because it's not funny. And so, you know, you want to be. But there's a greater burden, and we're held to a higher standard. And that was just proof of it.
Mm-hmm. Alan, you want to say anything?
Well, no, just let's try to remember that this is a president who mocks every day on the air, on his tweets. He's a mocker in chief. And so a macha in
chief. That's right.
And so
he's not a mod or a rocker. He's a mocker.
A macha. It's a big shot. So that's right. And now they're calling out Schiff for a perfectly appropriate mock. It's ridiculous.
This is from Luke. David and Rosemary make good points, but the way to fix this is to break up Facebook and Google and Amazon and Disney and Fox. There's too much media concentration, and it squelches voices.
Yep.
Anybody? Really? Agreement?
I agree. It's not a good idea. Every time somebody comes along and says, hold down the press, don't let the press do its job, don't let people have their say, don't let people have the First Amendment, that's a terrible precedent.
This is antitrust, not holding
down
the press.
Oh, sure it is.
What do you think, Julie?
I think it is.
I think citizens have a responsibility to be more media savvy. They need to do more reading. I think we need to step up and be better citizens. I think think it's on us. I don't think it's on government to solve this problem for us.
This is from Phyllis. Brilliant. I agree with Alan that the interruptions on NPR were annoying. That's why we decided to watch it on TV. I think the Democrats made a mistake by not pounding the fact that the funds were released only after the hold was made public in September. The fact was only told by one representative near the end of the hearing. Republicans kept bringing up the fact that the funds were released. Yeah. Democrats should have emphasized more the timeline of the release.
That's going to be a long set of hearings. I think there's plenty of time for that. Schiff did this at the end, and I thought it was pretty effective that he closed with it. It's something people carried with them the rest of the day.
Witnesses are sworn in, says Chris in Chatham. They swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, yada, yada, yada. I question why House representatives such as Jordan and Nunes aren't sworn in as well. Why are they allowed to tell lies while those testifying would be committing a crime by lying to Congress? And that's from Chris.
Damn well said.
Anybody?
They're not doing it because we have always privileged people who sit in a legislature and said that they are above what we mortals have to do.
It's a constitutional protection. Courts and legislatures are privileged.
Well, which is why a lot of people don't like to give up their legislative offices in foreign countries, as you know only too well, Rosemary, because you've covered them all these years. Mm-hmm. Because they know that once they're outside, they're vulnerable.
Yeah, I think it's really important. The free flow of ideas is facilitated by this sort of, you can say something and not be held accountable for every word. You are held accountable, but you don't have to be, you're not subject to libel.
Well, there is something to be said about the voters holding you
exactly.
accountable.
Exactly, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I think that what happens moving forward in our country is you're going to see wholesale changes in the way that that the various branches interact with one another. Because, mm-hmm. you know, not since the beginning of our country could we ever have envisioned an entire party refusing to participate in the democratic process. And so the opportunities for an executive to engage in tyrant-like behavior increases exponentially when one party and the party that is in power, in fact, refuses to hold that president accountable.
I think that discussion is way overdue.
It's way overdue.
It started with McConnell and Garrett, Merrick Garland, and that should have been a Supreme Court case.
But it is interesting to see that McConnell is not going to shut the trial down before Roberts and the Senate, which is an indication he's always got his finger up in the air with trying to see which way the wind is blowing. And he knows that his people, his Republicans who are up for office, are in deep trouble here, and he's got to decide which is the best thing to do.
I think that this discussion, though, is outside of impeachment. It has to do with cases now going through the court on whether a subpoena from Congress needs to be honored,
yep.
whether the president has to turn over taxes. There is a direct assault on the first branch of government against the second, and that is a supreme constitutional battle.
It is, and so the reason I started off mm-hmm. making my comments is because I think what we have to see created are expedited processes.
Yep.
So that if you are not coming in and responding to a lawful congressional subpoena, then your case gets to be heard immediately.
Right away. Right? Yeah. I keep saying, what is the Supreme Court, what are any of the appeals court doing that's more important than deciding about the subpoena issue right now? And Sarah gave a whole answer about, oh, they're prepping and they have to do their research.
Judy Patrick.
No, I go. You got a stack of letters.
Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, well, thank you for keeping me on point. This one's from John in Half Moon, subject heading, David Soares Media Concern. While I share David's consternation over the apparent ability of social media to easily confuse and propagandize us, you would think that a society bombarded constantly with misleading advertising messages would be better equipped with a BS meter. The fact is, the First Amendment demands that we each individually be responsible for triaging the information that bombards us, garbage in, garbage out, as the last 3 years have demonstrated.
Well think about all these medical ads that we're seeing on television every 2 seconds, and they always end with, get this product, get this product, get this product. And by the way, you can die of a heart attack, you can faint, you can do this, you can do that. Can you imagine if we did that with everything that is said? Say, and by the way?
I guess if I can rephrase without So to me, the problem is the fact that there are algorithms that monitor exactly what it is that people view on social media. And once that algorithm is developed, then you continue to get pounced with the similar material. So if you're looking up an article about how Obama was not born in the United States or is not a citizen, you're going to continue to be bombarded. You could be on a very different website and have that story pop up.
True.
And so there is an element here of control that bothers me.
Well, but when government starts to exercise that control, I know you guys are bored with my mentioning Great Barrington, but when you get a board of selectmen who are saying a member of the selectmen cannot bring up anything that is going to come before the vote, it's ridiculous. And this is the kind of thing that Trump is propagating because people like the Great Barrington Board of Selectmen are emboldened now.
So I think there's a new term to be had here. There's people with first world problems, but we have now Great Barrington problems.
Yeah. You know, maybe the president will retire to Great Barrington when he's done, right?
Could be.
This one
would be appropriate.
He lives in Florida now. Forget it.
Massachusetts, so the taxes are also get him.
Yeah.
This is from Janos in Great Barrington. How will we ever know if a whistleblower ever existed?
Why does it matter? Since all of the information that came from the whistleblower is now on a first-name basis, we can talk to the people directly involved. It's very much like a confidential tip to a reporter. You don't use the person who brings you that information.
This president, as I've said on a number of occasions, is dumb out loud. And I understand that he's the dude who sits in the room and makes all decisions. I know that it was this man that said, you know what, release the transcript, right?
I think he's releasing another one today.
That's what he said. Let's see it.
So all of this is his own doing. You don't need anyone helping this man engaging in self-destruction.
Wait. Responding to Janos of Great Barrington, who I do not know.
Okay. It was GB. It could be Great Britain, too. I don't know. Yeah, I just assumed.
It isn't. Okay. Responding to him, it's the Republican aficionados who released this information. A credible, so said the inspector general and everybody else. This is their guy, not the Democratic guy. This is their guy. That's how you know.
This is from John, subject heading indefensible. Really? CNN's legal analyst Tobin said yesterday that fourth-hand hearsay expert witness testimony is very problematic. He said that while it may or may not tell a story, you can't impeach a president based on that. Does the panel really expect that it is viable testimony and that any of it would be admissible in a Senate trial? Although I would wager that both the whistleblower and Schiff will be called to testify.
One of the most impressive things that's happened, and I'm even surprised that the Democrats were able to do this, is the fact that while your case may have started with a whistleblower who provides you with information that you subsequently can corroborate, in other words, we have tip hotlines all the time that report crime. They don't leave their names, but you have someone who can independently go out, verify, and corroborate. And then it doesn't become hearsay anymore, and it becomes a case that can be independently made. The other problem here with that letter is the fact that, again, the Republicans are succeeding in conflating what this process is with what happens in a court of law.
And let's be clear, they want the name of the whistleblower released because they want to attack him. They want to tear them down. They want to.
They already are doing that.
Well, I agree with your point, David, and I have actually made that point that this is not the same as a court of law or even the Senate trial. It is a trial, to some extent, of public opinion. So, should the Republicans have more sway as to what witnesses are called?
Well, Republicans can have more sway, but the Republicans are the very party that made the rules that they now have to live under. Right. Mm-hmm. These rules, they made them. Right. But you can't just call witnesses. Right. For the sake of calling witnesses. Like, why would you be calling Joe Biden? Why would you be calling Hunter Biden? Right. Why would you put their names on the list? You're playing the political game and you're not playing the fact finding game.
This one's from Ed. Trump's already been accused of setting up the Ukrainian quid pro quo on the same day he was, quote, exonerated by the Mueller report. But just yesterday, during the first day of impeachment hearings against him, Trump was meeting at the White House with Turkish dictator Erdogan. According to an investigative article in yesterday's New York Times, the wealthy son-in-laws of both Erdogan and Trump have been involved in shady business deals that, among other consequences, set an environment for the abrupt pullout of U.S. troops from Syria. Syria. Looks like even yesterday, Trump was continuing his treasonous ways of trading U.S. interests for his own personal gain while being publicly reviewed for the same crimes. And that's from Ed in Delmar. Anybody?
We've seen nothing yet. We have seen nothing. This is going to be the only president who, years after he leaves office, we will continue to uncover crimes upon crimes upon crimes. This is an election for the rest of us, but this is the remainder of his life for him, right?
So do you think he'll be held account for him?
Which is why he will do anything and say anything for re-election.
And just consider, if he loses the election in 2020, he's going to be a lame duck president for 6 weeks or so. What will he do in those weeks? How many pardons will we see?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Between November and January.
The pardons are interesting. Yeah. Do you think, David, he will be held accountable for these crimes as they're uncovered later years when he is not in office?
The first thing that's going to happen when Kamala Harris becomes the Attorney General of the United States is she will be forced to look at all of the engagements that the Trump family has engaged in to see whether there's any connection between their profiteering and the policies that have been enacted over the course of the last four years.
That's something to look forward to.
So then it would theoretically be all right for the Attorney General, the Republican Attorney General, to look into, make sure that Hunter Biden made no extra money because his dad was vice president?
I will tell you this, that what I've seen here that is almost bordering on genius, right, was a plan that then they failed to execute. It was their plan. Because by having William Barr engage in this origins of the Mueller report investigation, they were literally laying, the pretext for all of the other acts that this president has engaged in. So you could legitimately make the argument that, well, if Rudy Giuliani was looking into these issues in the Ukraine, wasn't that really just part of what DOJ was doing, right? But they failed even there because DOJ was like, we don't know anything that Rudy Giuliani
Well, the IG report may be out early next week, so we may have a roundtable or two about that while the impeachment hearings are going on. It is an abundance of topics here on the program. This one's from John. Good morning, panel, is the subject heading. Well, good morning, John. Watching the testimony yesterday, I was impressed by the integrity and courage of the witnesses, Bill Taylor and George Kent. They are truly patriots. Contrast that with the Republican questioners, including our very own Elise Stefanik. What an embarrassment for New Yorkers. Why would anyone want to defend this unfit, malignant narcissist who likely colluded with a foreign adversary to win the 2016 election? At least John Faso got voted out. Hopefully the same will be true for Stefanik in 2020. Also, Alan is right about the NPR coverage. Judy Woodruff was interviewing a panel on last night's news, and one of the panelists suggested that there was nothing to see and was never called out, and that is from John in Chatham.
Yeah, Stefanik interests me in the same way that Lindsey Graham does, too. Why is she taking the stance she does? Does it reflect her district? Possibly. It's a purple district at best. Also, though, she is the lone Republican woman voice. That's really powerful, and she has risen much more quickly than she had a right to expect. And I think that she derives personal benefit from being a Trump defender, and that's abhorrent.
Well, the Republican Party are untethered to their core principles. We no longer have war hawks, right?
Right.
We no longer have deficit hawks. So the birds have left the nest.
Yep.
Judy.
I agree. And in fact, so Stefanik made a point of challenging the rules early on. But then finally she gets to ask some questions. I say, finally, we got a woman asking some questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But all she does is she just parrots back his testimony. She didn't really ask a question at all. And kind of, I thought it was ineffective, and I was hoping for more. I tend to be naive, but I was hoping that the Republicans would really be interested in doing some fact finding.
I've never really thought of you as naive. Alan, what do you think?
No, I don't think she's naive.
Okay, fair enough. This one is from Marilyn. Another kind of observation. William Taylor was great, but he definitely deteriorated from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. He looked tired. He fumbled for answers. Ambassador Taylor is 72. No one who is over 70 should be elected president. As an 84-year-old, I know how one loses stamina and acuity after age 70. And that's from Marilyn in Lenox.
I love that letter.
You know,
I hate it.
You look at me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not the same person.
Well, you make
either.
A point.
He did look tired, but he through the whole thing.
I was tired.
Yeah, I was too. Just listening to him, and he so impressed me with the struggle to be fair, to really think of the question and what was being asked. He was. You said it, David. A terrific witness.
And he had a sense of humor.
He did.
But,
yes.
But you have to be engaged. You're locked in, even for the person doing the questioners. You must be locked in. And people believe that they're listening. They're not actively listening. This man had to actively listen to every question and address it on granular levels, which was impressive.
And I have to say that a lot of people thought he sounded just like Walter Cronkite.
It's funny. Now, in the newsroom, we said, well, who is this? Is it an old Leonard Nimoy? Is it Tom Brokaw? We had several people that it possibly was, and Cronkite didn't come up.
By the way, did anybody see, I've mentioned it before, but did anybody see the president on the air yesterday? He looked depressed to me. It really wasn't the old bombastic Trump. He looked like he was down.
Oh, that could be wishful thinking.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay, last letter, and then we're going to break it for the day. This one is from James. People in the media say something like, we'll have to wait and see if the public opinion has shifted on this issue. So what's the best way for the public to let its collective opinion be known? And that's from James in Williamstown. We only have 20 seconds.
Answer the phone when the pollster calls.
That's right.
Up.
Answer the questions. Take the time.
All right.
Call your Congress people.
All right, well, this was a lot of fun, and thank you all for being here. The letters, I got to say.
We
didn't get
today.
To nearly all of them, and I want to thank everybody. There was some great content there, and we appreciate it. We'll be doing this again, not probably tomorrow, but on Monday. Thanks to David Soares for being here, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. And again, I apologize if we did not get to your letters today. We have a lot of good radio ahead. In theory.
We heard from one person who said, how come you didn't read my letter? You read my roommate's. Can you imagine?
I apologize.
Talk about chutzpah.
All right. Well, that's where we'll leave it for today. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.